translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. The lotus feet of the Lord are by themselves the shelter of all places of pilgrimage. The great clear-minded sages, carried by the wings of the Vedas, always search after the nest of your lotus-like face. Some of them surrender to your lotus feet at every step by taking shelter of the best of rivers, the Ganges, which can deliver one from all sinful reactions. The Paramhamsas are compared to royal swans who make their nests on the petals of the lotus flower. The Lord's transcendental bodily parts are always compared to the lotus flower because in the material world, the lotus flower is the last word in beauty. The most beautiful thing in the world is the Vedas or Bhagavad Gita because therein knowledge is imparted by the personality of Godhead himself. The Paramhamsas make his nest in the lotus-like face of the Lord and always seek shelter at his lotus feet, which are reached by the wings of Vedic wisdom. Since the Lord is the original source of all emanations, intelligent persons enlightened by Vedic knowledge seek the shelter of the Lord, just as birds who leave the nest again search out the nest to take complete rest. All Vedic knowledge is meant for understanding the Supreme Lord, as stated by the Lord in Bhagavad Gita 15:15. Vedaischa sarvairahameva vedya. Intelligent persons who are like swans take shelter of the Lord by all means and do not hover on the mental plane by fruitlessly speculating on different philosophies. The Lord is so kind that he has spread the river Ganges throughout the universe so that by taking a bath in that holy river, everyone can get released from the reactions of sins which occur at every step. There are many rivers in the world which are able to evoke one's sense of God consciousness simply by one's bathing in them. And the river Ganges is chief amongst them. In India, there are 5 sacred rivers, but the Ganges is the most sacred. The rivers, river Ganges and Bhagavad Gita are chief sources of transcendental happiness for mankind. And intelligent persons can take shelter of them to go back home, back to Godhead. Even Sripad Shankaracharya recommends that a little knowledge in Bhagavad Gita and the drinking of a little quantity of Ganges water can save one from the punishment of Yamaraj. Om Jnanatimirandhasya Jnananjanishalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desha Tarine Vancha Kalpataru Bhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. My dear Lord, please guide us all as we take shelter of the wisdom that can empower us to take shelter of your lotus feet. Hare Krishna. So I'm grateful to be here with all of you once again. And this is one of the most visually and semantically beautiful verses in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And in this verse, a prayer is being offered about how the Lord is eminently worth being taken shelter of. Marganti yatte mukhapadmanidaish. So I'll just explain the verse itself and then we will discuss about the Lord who is glorified as the supreme object of shelter in this verse. So, Mukhapadma Nidais. So, it is described that the lotus face of the Lord, Mukhapadma, that is like a nest. And our heart is like a fluttering, wandering bird. And that bird has strayed far away from the nest that is its home. And it has not only strayed far away, it's like that bird has lost its wings. Just like Jatayu, while fighting against Ravan, had his wings lopped off by that vicious demon. Similarly, it is like the illusions of this world have lopped off our wings. And Chanda Suparnair Rishayo Vivikte. We get the wings to fly high in the sky and to the Lord who exists beyond the sky by the study of Vedic scriptures. Chanda Suparnair. The wisdom given in these hymns is like the wings for us. And powered by these wings, we all can fly and we attain that Supreme Lord who, lest as the birds fly high into the sky, the soul flies high, far, far away into the kingdom of God. And yet, the second part of this verse says that we shouldn't think that the Lord is very far away. The Lord makes himself accessible to us even when we are here right now. Yasyaga marisho the saridavaraya, that the Lord makes himself specially manifest to free us from the sins, from the unhealthy impressions, from the self-sabotaging desires that keep us away from him. And how does he do that? Through his manifestations of mercy, like the sacred Ganga River. And Prabhupada says there are many rivers like that across the world. So I'll speak today about two aspects of the Lord and how they both can inspire us to take shelter. So the entire session today where I'll be speaking, I'll be using this as a whiteboard to write and draw certain things. That the Lord has two aspects to him. There is his transcendence, which is a word we often use. But there is also his immanence. So the first half of this verse is talking about the transcendence of the Lord. Now, the word transcend, so actually, I'll keep coming back to this particular diagram. And this diagram will summarize everything that I'm going to speak today. But let me explain. See, there is, across the world's various theologies, there is always a question of God's relationship with nature, or specifically with the world. And there are two schools of thought broadly. One is that God is transcendent. That means God exists beyond nature. That there is nothing material about him. And to attain him, we need to go beyond the world of matter. That God is transcendental. And while that is definitely true, there is another school of thought that God is also immanent. Immanent means that he is within nature. That he is not far away. He is right here with us even now. So both these aspects are very much a part of the teaching of the Bhagavad Gita, which Prabhupada, in his own beautiful way in the purport, he said, just as the Ganga River is flowing, similarly, the Gita is flowing. While the Ganga is localized at a particular place, but the flow of the sacred words that have come from Krishna's lotus lips can spread everywhere, can spread as far as we humans want it to spread. So, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about both these aspects. For example, in 7:13, I'll explain these verses. He talks about Krishna's transcendence. And 7:7 to 7:12, he's talking about his immanence. So, and the conclusion about both of, after understanding both of these, is that we surrender to the Lord. That is 7:14. This is a well-known verse. Daiviyesha gunamai mama maya duratyaya mameva ye prapadyante mayam etam tarantite. Take shelter of me. Although the illusion of this world is very difficult to overcome, it can be overcome if you just surrender to me. So what is it that will inspire us to surrender? It is understanding God's place in relationship with this world. So in 7.7, Krishna says, Sutre Manigana Iva. He says that in this world, if we compare it to a necklace, and it's a very striking vision. Sometimes we can become very pessimistic about this world and say this world is dukkhale. Well, that is a teaching of the Gita. Krishna also compares this world to a beautiful necklace. And a necklace is filled with attractive jewels. And he says, underlying this necklace, unifying its many jewels together, is the thread. And Krishna says, he is the thread of truth that underlies and unifies all of existence. So this is referring to God's immanence in this world, that he exists within this world. And then Krishna gives many examples of his immanence. For example, Rasoham apsu kaunteya, I am the taste of water. Punyo gandha prithivyamcha, I am the fragrance of the earth. So now this list is indicative, it is not exhaustive. It is meant to indicate that this is how we can perceive the presence of God in this world. So, I'll first just explain the scriptural section and then we'll move forward to the concept a little bit more. After describing how he is present in this world, in fact, Krishna also includes in that list the activity that we normally think as having the highest potential to take our consciousness away from him. That is sexuality. And Krishna says in that same very list, dharma aviruddho bhuteshu, kamosmi bharatarshava, that even in that activity, when reproduction happens through it, that's a miracle. And it is God who makes that miracle happen. So, immanence of God means that we are able to perceive God's presence in this world itself. After speaking this, however, Krishna emphasizes that his existence extends beyond this world. In 7.13 he states, 7.12 and 13 he says, 7.12 says, Ye chaiva sattvika bhava rajasas tamasascha ye matta eveti tanviddhi natvaham teshu te mai. So he says that all these states of existence, they come from me. I don't come from them. So in 7.12 and 13, he says, these come from the modes come from me. They are in me, I am not in them. And then he says that we are all bewildered because everything in this world is covered by the three modes. Tribhir guna maya ir bhavai, ebhi sarvam idam jagat, mohitam nabhi janati, mamebhi paramavayam. So basically, he's saying there is this veil of illusion that prevents us from perceiving him. Although he is present in this world and beyond this world, we are unable to perceive him. But still, we can surrender to him. So, this is the concept of the transcendence and the immanence of God. So, let's look at this from another perspective. That if we consider what transcendence and immanence means. See, the normal conception is, say, this is the material level of reality. And this is the spiritual level of reality. And Krishna exists at the spiritual level. And that's the idea, is that we practice bhakti and go from this world to the spiritual world. While this is a valid understanding, it is not the complete understanding. The other understanding is that actually everything is contained within Krishna. Even this world is contained within Krishna. So when we are to practice bhakti, it is not just by turning away from this world toward Krishna. Rather, we can turn toward this world, serve Krishna in this world, and thereby also go towards Krishna. So this is the approach that focuses on the transcendence of Krishna. Oh, Krishna exists beyond this world. But this is the approach which focuses on the immanence of Krishna. that Krishna exists even in this world. Yatah pravrittir bhutanam yena sarvamidam tatam svakarmanatam abhyarcha siddhim vindati manava. Krishna talks about this in 1846. For example, he talks about this in 815. Well-known verse. Mam upetya punarjanma dukkhalem shashvatam napnuvanti mahatmana samsiddhim paramam gata. He says, you will attain the supreme destination beyond this world of distress if you take shelter of me. So one way is just turn away from this world and come to me. But that is not the only thing that Krishna recommends. He says, understand that from me the whole world has emanated. By me the whole world is pervaded. And thus through the work that you do, you can worship me and attain me. So svakarmanatam abhyarcha. Sometimes this is simplistically mistranslated as work is worship. That is not what Krishna is telling. He is saying through your work worship me. But the idea is God is both immanent and transcendent. And understanding these two aspects of God is very important. Now if I go back over here to this idea. I have envisioned this as a pendulum. Now pendulum can go towards two extremes. Now if we focus only on the transcendence of God, what happens is God is far away from this world. God exists in the spiritual world. If that is our only conception of God, now in our tradition, it is true, Bhagawan exists in the spiritual world. So Bhagawan is the transcendental aspect of God. But there is also Paramatma. Sarvasya chaham hridisan nivishto. He is the immanent aspect of God. If we focus only on the transcendental aspect, God can seem too remote. He can seem too unconcerned. We may start thinking, you know, I am facing this problem and that problem. I have so many challenges externally, internally. And Krishna is playing his flute in the spiritual world, enjoying with the gopis. Does he even know what I am going through? So God can seem very remote and unconcerned. And most importantly, this is more in terms of the conception of God. But practically, for us, God can seem inaccessible. Because if God is only spiritual, sorry, God is only non-material, that's the emphasis of spiritual over here, that God is only manifest at the non-material level, and we exist in the material world, our senses are material, our eyes are material, our body is material, God becomes inaccessible. He becomes very remote. And that's how God starts feeling inaccessible and eventually starts feeling irrelevant. Yeah, what can... God is so far away. How does he matter in my life? Now, on the other hand, if we go towards the other extreme and focus only on God's immanence, then the idea of immanence is very important to understand. See, different traditions at different times have swerved in the pendulum in different directions. So now these two ideas, that God's transcendence and God's immanence, have both been there throughout human history in the world's various theologies. In the Indian history, the bhakti tradition, especially during the medieval times, which were a times of great religious persecution because of the Islamic rule in India. So the bhakti tradition started becoming more and more focused on transcendence. That just turn away from this world. Just immerse yourself in the divine. Mm-hmm. Now, that is valid. Sometimes when we just can't change anything in this world, we need to turn away from the world. But that is not the only approach to bhakti. Krishna is so concerned about this world that he descends to this world again and again for dharma samsthapanarthaya sambhavami yuge yuge. Arjuna wanted to turn away from the world, but Krishna told him, turn towards the world fight in this world for establishing order. So at different times across history, the emphasis of particular traditions may go towards transcendence or too much towards immanence. And in the bhakti tradition, often that transcendent aspect has been emphasized according to time, place, circumstance. But that emphasis can make people just impractical or otherworldly or irrelevant. There was a survey done in America a couple of decades ago. What are general people's perception of the Hare Krishnas? It says, a bunch of jolly, impractical people. Now we go around dancing on the street, singing, and it may seem that, you know, we have got nothing to do with this world. Yeah, we are jolly, we are happy. But do we address the issues of the world at all? So, or is our only response to any problem in the world, this world is dukkhale, get out of it. So actually, immanence, if it is neglected, as I said, it can be seem very irrelevant. And many bhakti theologians now are emphasizing how immanence is a part of the Vedic tradition. Now, there is an environmental crisis. Of course, there is politics associated with it, and it has become a polarizing issue. But undoubtedly, there is some problem with the way we have handled the environment. The dispute is over how we should respond to it. But the idea is, even many mainstream scientists and thinkers are saying that we need to infuse our efforts to take care of the environment with a vision of the sacred. And that vision of the sacred is actually most directly emphasized in the Vedic tradition, in the bhakti tradition, through the idea of the universal form. That the universe is actually the body of God. That is the most vivid visualization of the immanence of God. That the trees are like the hair on the body of the Lord. And the mountains and the peaks are like the bones on the body of the Lord. It's a visualization, no doubt. But that visualization is given within the tradition. And that is indicated to emphasize the immanence of the Lord. So the purpose of emphasizing immanence is to actually show that, to infuse divinity within creation, within nature. That nature is not just profane, nature is not just mundane. That actually it is divine, it is infused with divinity. Now the problem with immanence taken too far is that it can lead to what is called as pantheism. Pan is everything, like a pan-European endeavor. That means endeavor that encompasses all of Europe. So pantheism is the idea that everything is God. Now, the problem with this idea is that God becomes reduced to nature. That God is considered to be the sum total of all things. And when pantheism holds that, okay, God is the sum total of all of material existence, and that God has no self-existence beyond nature. So God becomes, by this, becomes reducible to nature. That there is no personhood to God. There is no personality to God as some being existing beyond nature. In the Isha Upanishad, it says, Taddure tadva antike. The Lord is inside everything, but the Lord is also outside everything. That the idea of immanence taken too far makes God seem to be nothing more than nature itself. And many scientists who are theistic often go toward this idea of God as nature itself. So in the European tradition, Spinoza was a prominent proponent of that. Einstein's God, there are books written about that whole conception. And his God also seemed to be more this pantheistic, naturalistic kind of deity. So Einstein has made quotes, as quotes attributed to him, which talk about his acceptance of the existence of God. But there are also quotes about him which say that he doesn't believe in the God of religion. So his idea of God was complex. He went through his own challenging experiences in life, including witnessing and the Holocaust and escaping it. That naturally affected his conception of God also. But the point is that for him, the idea of nature and nature being filled with some brilliant organization, for such people, the laws of nature themselves are equated with the divine. So God loses his self-existence. And when God becomes reducible to nature, then God essentially ends up becoming impotent. Why? Because there is nothing beyond this world to which God will deliver us. This world is all that there is, and the laws of nature are themselves God. So what will God do to intervene and deliver us? So this idea, immanence taken too far, is a problem. That it makes God seem just, okay, it's nice to worship God, but there's no use to pray to such a God. Because God is nature and God can't intervene in nature in that sense. Now the balanced understanding is in between. That God is both transcendent and immanent. Now when Prabhupada would sometimes say the holy name is transcendental, what his emphasis was that actually when we are uttering the holy name, it's a sound coming from the same throat with which we are speaking other words. So in that sense, somebody might argue that it's just a material sound. But actually, Krishna manifests within that material sound. So actually, Prabhupada is emphasizing the non-material manifestation that is there within that materially produced sound. So he's actually talking about the immanence of God when he's emphasizing the transcendence. That Krishna is present within this sacred sound. So now, if we understand both Krishna's immanence and transcendence together, what happens by that? That Krishna, when we understand that Krishna is immanent, that means we understand that he is accessible to us, that he is never far away from us, that at every moment in our hearts and in our lives, now Krishna is with us, within us, sarvasya chaham hrudi sannivishto. He is closer to us than the closest person to us can be, even if we hold them in the tightest of hugs. He is closer to us than the most secret thought in our heart that we dare not even voice to anyone. He is that close to us always. So Krishna is always accessible to us. That is the assurance that we get when we understand his immanence. And he's not just within us. When we look at nature, when we observe the majesty and the beauty and the artistry of the world, we can see that as a manifestation of the divine intelligence. So God is accessible for us. That's what comes from understanding the immanence. Sorry, I'll put it over here. When we understand Krishna's immanence, we understand that he's accessible. Now, when we understand Krishna's transcendence, we understand that he's infallible. He's infallible, he's achyuta. That he is not subjected to the vagaries of the world. Sometimes one day we meet a person and that person seems to be so warm and caring and loving. And you feel, oh, this is such a nice person. I want to have a relationship with this person. And then next day we meet and that person seems to be in a completely different mood. And you start thinking, what happened? You know, yesterday you treated me as if I was your best friend. Today you're treating me as if I don't even exist. So the modes affect the moods of everyone. And because of that, the people, they they may just be unpredictably variable. And that's what often makes relationships difficult. But Krishna is not affected by the modes. Krishna is Suhrudam Sarvabhutanam. He's the well-wisher of everyone at all times. He never abandons us. He never turns away from us. He never rejects us. He never loses the power to be able to help us. Now, somebody may want to help us in this world, but the nature of the world is that, now, if Krishna were non-immanent, non-transcendent rather, if Krishna were in this world, then he would become something similar to a person in this world. Now, the problem in this of people in this world is that they are fallible. Why fallible? Because the world itself, there are changes. Sometimes there are internal changes where people's moods may change. But there are external changes when their power may change. So a person may promise, I'll help you when you are in trouble. But maybe tomorrow they don't have that position, they don't have that wealth, they don't have that energy, they don't have that intelligence. Everything in this world is temporary. So in this world, because the material world is changing, na sato vidyate bhavo, na bhavo vidyate sataha. Krishna says, adhibhutam ksharo bhava. The only unchanging thing in this world is that nothing is unchanging. The only constant is change. The only unchanging thing is nothing is unchanging. That's why if we depend exclusively on any person in this world, that will disappoint us. In fact, Prabhupada in the first canto, he says that one of the problems for the shortening of lifespan and the agitation of mind in Kali Yuga is over-dependence on another's mercy. Because people are so unpredictable, and especially with respect to today's world, the minds are so unpredictable. That's why people are often very reserved about even opening up for relationships. Because it's difficult to count on others. But Krishna is not subjected to these material vicissitudes. He is someone we can always count on. So when we understand that Krishna is both infallible and accessible, that's how we understand that he is supremely desirable for us. He is the person whom we should desire. He is the person whom we should long for. He is the person whose aid we need to seek. Aid is the acronym over here. He is accessible. He is infallible. He is supremely desirable. He is the person who can aid us in all situations. He is never far away. He is never powerless. It is he who always wants us. It is he who comes to this world again and again to reclaim us. It is he who desires us already. It is we who just need to desire him. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, the purpose of sadhana bhakti is that Atha chittam samadhatum nashaknosi maistiram abhyasa yoge natato mam ichhaptum dhananjaya. Krishna says, when we practice remembrance, when we do sadhana bhakti, the purpose of this is our desire for Krishna should increase. So when we hear about Krishna, when we hear his various pastimes, we could just see them as entertaining stories. But if we understand that this is actually the Lord, then our desire to take shelter of that Lord will increase. And the greater our desire, the greater will be our perception of the Lord. The Lord doesn't want to hide himself from us. This is the last point I'll conclude with. The Lord doesn't want to hide himself from us. If he is invisible to us, that's not because he wants to stay invisible. It's because for us, we want many other things to be visible more than him. It's like sometimes what happens is, Say someone doesn't want to talk with us and we are standing right in front of them and they're talking with the person next to here and person here and person here. I'm right in front of you. But if they don't want to talk, then just keep looking here and there and there. So like that, you know, if we are unable to perceive Krishna, that's because we are too eager to see other things in this world. And that is what, when our desire, it is misdirected. The misdirected desire has two effects to us. First, it is binding, and second, it is blinding. These are the two energies of the Lord, Avaranatmika and Prakshepatmika. So Avaran is covering. So there is the Avaranatmika Shakti, by which what happens? We become blinded to the Lord. And there is Prakshepatmika. Prakshepatmika means throwing. Our consciousness gets thrown or pulled towards various objects in this world. And that's how we forget the Lord. Say, suppose someone goes to watch a movie. And maybe their best friend is sitting right next to them. Maybe a small child is gone. And mother is sitting right next to the child. But say it's a horror movie or whatever. And then as soon as the movie starts, two things happen. The lights around go off. And the light in front goes on. Now both of these do the same thing. They just pull the consciousness away from everything around toward the illusion that is there on the screen. So the lights go around us going off, that is the Avaranatmika Shakti. That is what blinds us. And the lights on the screen going on, that is the Prakshepatmika Shakti. That's what pulls us towards illusion. So now it's a horror movie and the child is horrified. Child may be trembling. Now the mother is sitting right next to the child, ready to comfort and pacify the child. But the child is completely caught. So like that, Purusha Prakriti Sthohi Bhungte Prakriti Jangunan Karanam Guna Sangosya Sad Asad Yoni Janmasu. In 13:23, Krishna states that it is because we are so desirous of enjoying the things of this world that we forget the Lord. That we get subject to these two effects, the blinding and the binding potency of illusion. But nonetheless, if we just turn towards Krishna as much as we can, we try to remember Him whenever we can, how much we can, gradually we'll start awakening. We'll start perceiving Krishna. And even during our chanting, during our hearing, we may not be able to concentrate constantly, but even a little bit concentration, that is the beginning of the dissipation of illusion. Sometimes it is Krishna's transcendence that may inspire us to take shelter of Him. Sometimes it is Krishna's immanence that may inspire us to take shelter of Him. Sometimes we hear some wonderful pastime of Krishna, which He does with His devotees, and we feel, this is the world I long for. This is where I belong. This is where I want to go to. So that's the transcendence appealing to us. Sometimes we chant and we feel some divine power. Sometimes we participate in kirtan. Sometimes we behold the beautiful darshan. And we feel some sublime presence. It's not that I have to go to the spiritual world to be with Krishna. There is something mystical right here with me. That is the time when the immanence of Krishna is pulling us. But either way, however we feel the pull of Krishna, whether it is by His transcendence or by His immanence, we gratefully value that pull. We gratefully let ourselves be drawn towards our Krishna. We let our desire for Him keep increasing. And in that way, we will all one day experience Krishna in this world with us and ultimately experience Krishna beyond this world. So I'll summarize what I discussed today. I talked about, the broad topic was that taking shelter of Krishna. So the verse itself talks about the transcendence of Krishna, that with the wings of scripture, we can fly into the sky toward Krishna. That is talking about transcendence. But then it's also talking about the immanence of Krishna, where there are sacred rivers which can purify us here while we are in this world. So that is what is being indicated in this verse itself. So then the key theme we discussed is about how if the when we understand the transcendence of the Lord, the positive of that is that we understand that He is infallible, that He exists beyond this world. But if it's taken too much, the transcendence emphasized, then He becomes, He appears too remote, too unconcerned. He just exists in His world. And then it starts appearing that as if He is inaccessible to us. So transcendence is the idea that God is beyond nature. And then the immanence of Krishna, that on the positive side, it makes us understand that He is always accessible to us. But if again it's too much, then it makes God reducible to this world itself. In trying to infuse divinity into everything, if we have pantheism, pantheism basically takes divinity out of everything. Because pantheism takes away the self-existence of God itself. And it can make God impotent or irrelevant. So we want the balance of both of these. And we discussed how the transcendence of Krishna is talked about in 7, 12, 13. And the immanence of Krishna is talked about 7, 7 to 11. As well as in 1846, Yatah Pravrittir Bhutana. So the balance is, on one side is too much transcendence, too much immanence. In between, if we understand that from the transcendence, we understand Krishna is infallible. From His immanence, we understand that He is accessible. Now, whatever inspires us through it all, we understand that Krishna is always desirable. So, whichever way, yena kena prakarena, it is somehow or other fixed in the mind on Krishna. That means, sometimes through His immanence we may be inspired, sometimes His transcendence we may be inspired. But somehow, we try to trigger our desire for Krishna. And by that, we will all ultimately attain Krishna. So I'll just... on this theme, I've composed a small poetic prayer to Krishna. So I'll conclude with that. When You, O Lord, seem to be far away, it is I who am far away from the truth that You are never away. Even when from You my fickle mind goes away. As much as I seek toward You away, much more, O Lord, do You seek toward me away. Please, O Lord, from the illusions that take me away, take me, O Lord, from those illusions away. Shri Krishna Bhagavan ki, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Are there any questions? Yes, please. Is there a mic?
Hare Krishna, obeisances. You mentioned the term mercy and that we might be looking to the material world or to others for mercy.
For what?
Mercy. You mentioned that we may be looking for others for mercy, yeah, as okay. opposed to
Krishna. Over-dependence on others, yeah.
Over-dependence on others, yeah. I wonder if you could explain a little bit more about that term mercy, what we might be looking for in others, over-dependence, and how that might differ from the mercy that we might seek from Krishna.
Well, politics has become the new religion. I was just in America. America is highly polarized. You know, people think that a particular political leader will save the world, will save the country. And India also is something similar. Now, your political changes can make a difference, no doubt. And a good leader is definitely better than a bad leader. But the level of polarization, it's not just 20, 30 years ago, when talking with my devotee friends in America, you know, people didn't care whom you voted for. Now, if you voted for this person, I won't even talk with you. It's almost like religious shunning of someone. So, some survey was done. Even say, people, say somebody who's a Democrat refuses to marry somebody who's a Republican. And Republicans also return the same favor in America. So the idea is that to think that some person in this world, if just that person is elected, all problems will be solved. That is a vivid example in today's world of elevating someone to the level of God, of becoming too dependent on someone's mercy. This is not to say, again, that there is a difference between, say, competent and incompetent rulers. There is a difference between benevolent and malevolent rulers, no doubt. But over-dependence on someone's mercy means that we basically outsource the responsibility for improving our lives to that person. It is we have to take responsibility. Okay? Thank you. Yes, Pramod.
Thank you for the very nice class, bringing us all a sort of illustration of what is happening. I've got here several references. It's in Shikshaksatakam. We have to express the desire to see Krishna, and it says, Ai nanda tanujang king karam patitam mam vishami bhavam bodo kripaya dava padapankaja sutahita suti sadrisham vichinda. O son of Maharaj Nanda, I'm your eternal servitor, yet somehow or other I've fallen into this ocean of birth and death. Please pick me up from as an atom at your Then it says, the Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart and directing the wanderings of all the living entities who are seated as on a machine made of the material energy. O Sion of Bharat, surrender unto him utterly. By his grace, you will attain transcendental peace and reach the eternal abode. But then Prabhupada says, here's a quote here, of the secret of surrendering to Krishna, that such a surrendered soul sees that everything is part of Krishna's plan. Whatever I am meant to be, I am doing. Let me do it with my full attention to every detail. It says then, let all other considerations be forgotten, and my only desire is to do the best for Krishna's alone. Pleasure is my motive.
Thank you, Prabhu. These are beautiful references, especially that 1862, Tameva Sharanam Gacha. That comes right at after Krishna talks about his eminence, Ishvara Sarvabhutanam Riddheshi Arjuna Tishtati. I am inside the heart of every living being. So surrender to me. Yeah. Thank you so much. Shri Prabhupada ki chai, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki chai, Gaura.